I know he's coming, because I talked to him, he was between a wall sign type of helmet, so. Yeah, that was a little after 2 o'clock. But he said it'd be an hour and 20 minutes or so.
Isn't that traffic I see?
Yeah, we just did get off of 664 one time.
Well, what we left off 4 months ago was that we were going to come back after mandatory boarding was pretty much completed, and now we think we're real close to having at least the dredge and the hand scrape mandatory boarding in. So going to take back up there and where we were talking. And you can see how it came out. The harvest for 2016, the total harvest was about 28% of the year before.
Sure.
If you take away the special season that we added in Pocomo Sound, then it was only 65% of the year before with the hand scrape and the dredge. The biggest difference was in the dredge area. Obviously, Mob Jack didn't have very much compared to New York in 2014-15. But the really big difference was that, as we'd seen, there was no spat set and no spat set hardly at all in Pocomo Sound and very little in Tangier, so the dredge season was really poor.
Is that for mandatory reporting? It's just back of the envelope. Jerry was buying a couple hundred bushels a day, which would be 16,000 a month. And he came across every day. I know it was only 4 days in December per week.
Yeah.
But he came across in January and February. Maybe we'll get his numbers and just kind of check back.
Well, I mean, they wouldn't be any worse this year than they were the year before. So, I mean, if we're off, we were off the year before, too. Because I usually see the same people that report before. So, it would be the same thing the year before.
So this data doesn't take any consideration for any of this underground market that takes place. It's just data that you have.
That's all we can go on, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the only reason I say that is I know I can remember in the past being at meetings and some staff had made comments that we were about the problems of people not paying their taxes and stuff, that we were going to take actions to fix that.
Yeah.
I know that they knew that it was more than one. It was sufficient enough where they put a user fee on everybody to have to pay for that. So I figured they must have had some kind of idea. But I know I've talked to people that said, you know, when they were putting oysters out on market boats, that where they would give bonus bushels to people, and if the amount of bushels that the market boat showed it hadn't actually had it on the market boat, it might have sunk the market boat. You know.
That wouldn't be any worse in 2014 than it would be in 2015.
So that's just, you just assume that the dishonesty is consistent here.
Yeah, I think you'd have to.
Okay.
I mean, we know that, you know, guys load up bushels so that 10, okay, 8 bushels end up being 10 bushels because they put silicones on top of them.
I understand.
But the good news, Jim, was Rappahannock and the James were high.
We said they would hold up.
Yeah,
last
they did.
Year, those two.
So. That was encouraging.
So, now, based on,
but that's, you know, that's 30,000 more bushels, 36,000 actually more bushels than you predicted.
No, it's not.
Yesterday I got it written down right here. You predicted 130 in the hand scrape and 30 in the dredge.
Yeah, you take away the extra season we had, and it's pretty close. If I could be that exact, then we caught significantly less than we caught the year before. And this year it's going to be less again because we're going in the areas that again have coarse fat sets and 13, 14.
And you look at what was open in York River last year versus what was open in York River this year, and that puts your number. I mean, there's all kinds of angles you can look at that.
There's all kinds of angles, but the fact is there's less. And this would be our best guess of the harvest for the coming year, the red here. Which, again, the James is going to be down a little bit because of
when you look at the size category of the oysters, there's more that are not going to make it to market size by this fall season than they were last year. So that'll be down a little bit. York will be open this year, and it wasn't set there in 13 or 14, so that area is going to be a whole lot less than almost 30,000 that we had in 14, 15, which was working on the 2012 set. Rappahannock should be about the same. Great Wicomico will be down a little bit again because we got some small oysters in it that aren't going to make it. And Tangier and Pocomoke is going to be still way down.
Were you going to keep area 7 and 8 closed again this year?
Yeah. They went and sat there until this past. We had a set in 15, so there's no use opening them.
You think that's going to do it any good?
Huh?
You think that's going to do it any good? Be 2 years? Be 3 years before you work on it?
Well, we want those fast set to be, that's fast set to be protected until it gets to be close to market size, not the mag.
I don't know.
The dredging is hard on the fast set. So the long and short of it is that we're still in a situation where, you know, we have less stock with more people. And if you remember, you know, we went through a lot of options last year just for review on things you can do to reduce effort. We did take Friday off last year.
Well, for the coming up season, we don't have any more people.
Well,
took care of that with the.
Yeah, just be patient.
I'm just making sure I'm understanding as we go along. Is all I'm doing.
I mean,
we can't have any more in 16-17 than we did in 15-16, correct? With what the commission passed.
Yes, but it's
with the user fee.
Significant more than it was when we.
Okay, I'm just up. Again.
Yeah. And if you remember what we did last year, was we took all of the anybody that had harvested with a hand scraper or a dredge, and we put that in the pool and looked at both harvesting just with the hand scrape and just with a dredge, and we broke it down into the amount of effort that they had. And if you recall that they were, when you look at anybody that ever had a hand scrape that they could have worked, and you looked at the 2 years that they worked, 13 through 15, there were 409 of them that didn't work at all, 194 that worked less than 20 days. So we had 603 people we recommended in hand scrape fishery that they weren't working very much, to take out of the fishery and leave 541 people that did most of the work. And we did the same thing for the dredge, where we, you know, took out the ones that had zero, worked less than 20 days, and 479 of those, and 206 that worked more. So the 206 and the ones from the hand scrape is what we took to the commission and asked to keep them in the fishery. And it passed for 1 month, and then it was returned, overturned. So we're basically back to square one.
The basis for that overturning was?
People fussing.
Legislative pressure. The biggest
it was just legislative pressure. Wasn't a violation of the law. Well, that's good.
So we're back to looking at all these things over again. The guidance that we got from the commission was that they were much more comfortable with the control date, since that was passed and advertised, and people should have known about that. And since we had a control in place, it was easy to understand versus how many days you worked. And when you look at what we've seen in the, you know, since we dropped out and let people come back in for 2015, where we had 877 that we were working with last year, and now we're up to 991 that had user fees in 2015. We went up to 908 hand scrape licenses last year. From the year before, we were just 653. Dredges jumped up. Hat dogs jumped up. So So where we were is that if you look at our harvest here, the total harvest in 14, 15, and 15, 16, 26% of the harvest were harvested by the dredgers, 306 dredgers in 14, 15, where 6% of the harvest was taken by potentially 377. So it would have been a very small piece of the pie. The same thing over here with the hand scrape. In 14, 15, 59% of the harvest was taken by 652 people, licenses, and 908 shared 69% last year.
Was that 908 reported or 908 licenses sold?
908 licenses out there, they caught 69% of the harvest.
Whether
they worked or not. But that,
because that was a huge part of that spike last year, was everybody flipping out over what went on and going to buy licenses.
But the fact is, there was less to harvest with more people, which will be the same situation this year. These are the areas that will be open this year. Silver James, York, Area 2 and 4 in Rappahannock. Great McComico and Tangier. Just as an exercise to show you, we went ahead and looked at the user fees, and there are 1,124 people that have had a user fee before. So, like the freeze that we did on the user fees. In February, gives us a pool of 1,124 people that can get user fees. 742 of them are before the control date. 382 are after the control date. And 21 of this 742, even though they've had it, have never used it at any time during that time period. Yeah.
Do you know you've got the control date is 2/13? 2013 instead of 14?
No.
Huh?
That typo.
Okay.
So, as an exercise, you know, we said, you know, if you took out the ones after control date, plus the ones that had never used it, that had a user fee before the control date, that would give you 403 people that potentially could come out based on no harvest at all and after control day, which would get us down to 721, which is still quite a big fishery, but it's a whole lot less than now. But in this scenario, the way we were looking at it is that if you have a user fee, you're in. So you can do anything in orchards you want in there. If you can switch to any of the gears, if you had your user fee before the control date, you can hand dog, you can dredge, you can do anything you want that user fee allows you to do. Which last year when we were doing that, we were specifically aiming at hand scrapes and dredges. So by the 721 here is actually, there's still more people than 721 could conceivably come in and all get hand scrapes. They're not all doing that. Some of them are doing hand dogs, some do anything but hand dogs. If you look at those, if you look at the ones after the control date and the 21 that has never harvested, this is how they break down in the number of days they fished in oysters with some gear. It's 24. They counted for 24% of the total harvest, which when we did it last year, we were working down in the 9%, 9 to 10% of the harvest. And you can see how there's this big group that hasn't really done anything with their user fee of the new ones that came in, but the these group are the ones that have been working. flip side is that the other 76% of the ones that were in before the user, when the user fee started before the control date, this is how they break out. I mean, you have, still have a lot of them that are not really using it very much, and you have the majority that's over here getting a lot of days in the season. So that, you know, that, this is a simpler way of doing it because it's saying just a user fee. You can do anything if you're in, if you got a user fee, do any gear type you want.
That's where it should be.
And, wanted to see if that had some interest to the group as opposed to the one that we tried to be so precise on the two gear types.
Jim, what's those bottom numbers down there? Are they five, and nine?
They're days.
Days, okay. A day's worked, okay.
Yeah, bushels. How many?
Oh, bushels they call.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bushels they call. So, this from 50 to 99 up is the real active part of the fishery. Yeah.
And that's just the most current season.
And that's just this past year.
Okay.
That's just this past year.
Uh-huh. I've got a question I'd like to ask. Of all those people that are involved in the fishery, the majority of them are obeying the harvest rules honorably. The question I have for you, how many of those people are abusing the harvest privileges?
Who knows? I mean, we're
well, I'm just, well, they've gotten, well, to me, that should be a factor too. Because the people that are conducting themselves honorably in the oyster fishery should be able to retain their license. The people that are abusing that privilege, they're the ones that need to get rid of.
Yeah, we can only get rid of them for a couple of years at a time.
Well, that's wonderful that you're able to do that.
Yeah, but it's a very small group of people.
And so you do have information relevant to what that is?
There's some tally on that, but it's certainly no more than
20. Well, so there was that 121 people that you were taking off because they weren't working at all. So that number of 20 was relevant enough to be used. So why would not 20 be relevant to use for people that are abusing?
Well, if they lose their license, they're gone. I mean, they're gone for that time period that the commission suspends their license. I mean, we don't have a way to suspend their license forever.
That's fine.
So they're gone for 6 months or a year or 2 years, then they're out of this group for that little bit of time.
Well, that might help and create people be more honorable if they know they're not going to lose their privilege to work out in the river.
Well, we hope that's working with the ones that are that are getting kicked.
Well, I mean, if you're asking us to come up with things to take privileges away, I mean, I'm a lot more comfortable taking privileges away from somebody who's not acting in an honorable fashion than I am taking privileges away from somebody that's abusing a privilege. I have no problem with that at all.
20 out of 1,142 would be pretty small.
That's fine. That's fine.
The Code of Virginia only allows us to take away that license for a maximum of 5 years. It doesn't allow
if it was just for one season, that would be better than letting them go out there and continue their abuse.
They got to get caught and they got to get through the
system. Well, I think you need to make excuses to get them gone instead of excuses to allow them to stay. Okay? Well, I mean, I don't know what you're saying. You're saying it's only 5 years, so we can't do it? Is that what you're telling me?
It's a Code of Virginia. We can't do that here.
The commissioner can't do that. I mean, the code says we can only take their license the only one you can take for 5 years is somebody that's had their license taken away before and they get caught doing something again.
But the revocations have made a huge difference. I mean, I know in what we see at our dock, I used to catch pressure because we wouldn't bow the limit, we wouldn't do this, yeah. We lost boats. I don't hear any of that anymore, and I don't see, I mean, particularly as far as limits go, I think that's completely under control unless it's a random guy somewhere that's just doing something off on the side, but for the most part, I think that's really under control. And I think the revocations are what got it under control.
Well, Jim, I got one question. If you can't take that license, how can you take the rest of them people's license?
Well, in this situation, we set a control date. And we said that if you bought it after that date, that you would not be considered in any sort of entry.
So that would get you the legal part of it.
That's how you, we set a control date of July 1st, 2014. You're chairman, so you want to sit in the middle?
What? Come on up.
We've been waiting for you.
Hey, when I stepped off the boat at 1 o'clock, I've been heading this way ever since.
Damn, you drive slow, don't you?
That's how everybody else does. Yeah.
We reviewed kind of where we were last year and just showed two slides on the potential for using the control date, which we have 1,124 user fees that are eligible people, 742 were before the control date and 382 were after the control date. 21 of the 742 that were for control data have never harvested anything. So we had made up this table to look at adding, taking those 21 out along with the 382 and see what effect that would have. And that would take 403 out using the control data and never harvesting before. Leaving 721. And then when you look at those, 24% of the harvest comes from the ones after control date, and 76% of the harvest comes from the ones that were in fishery before the control date.
So the ones in it before the control date are the ones during the harvest?
Well, they're the most, but in reviewing for the last year what we did is we concentrated just on hand scrapes and dredges. When you think about the user fee, it would mean that if you have a user fee, you can do anything you want. And it's when you got in. Yeah, man, you can. So we won't be looking at the individual ones, but we actually we targeted the people that didn't work with hand scrapes and didn't work with dredges last year and took those eight in. We really only impacted about 9% of the harvest. Where this will impact up to 24% of ours by using the control date. But it does give more freedom to move in and out, you know, of whatever gear type you want.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jim, is there a way to buy back into it?
Well, that would be if we decide to go this way, then this committee would come up with the method that you do that. Get back in.
So you got a guy that's after control date that may be waterman that just started. It's really working. He's done because his user fee for oysters. But then a guy before the control date only works 8 days.
Well, then hopefully he's going to buy his user fee.
If he sells.
Yeah. Well,
that's an if.
You got 131 right here that have never worked. That would be certainly thinking about willing to sell. Along with most of those other ones and those low numbers too.
So. And then you've created a windfall for somebody who doesn't work.
Well, but at the same time, they were told when they came in after control date that this was a possibility.
I'm talking about the people before the control date that weren't working. That you're saying the people after the control date can buy a license.
I want to say no, you can't transfer in.
You can't with a quota. You can't say that.
Do what?
With a quota, you can't say you can't transfer in.
Do what? If you use a control date, you can come up with a transfer.
I understand, and I'm saying what I'm getting at the point that Mr. Harding was making, the individuals that you're saying are before the control date, that we're not using it before 5 days, by allowing them to sell it, the demand is going to be there for the people that were after the control date. You're creating a windfall for those people.
It is.
For doing nothing.
Yeah.
That was the point I was making.
Yeah, that's true.
And the cost of getting into Orston Street would be outrageous.
Just as bad as getting into Crab.
No more than buying crab pot like it is now.
It's just got to be a way for the young guys to get back into it.
How come we can't fit the resource to the demand of the user instead of fitting the user to the resource?
Because the resource is going down.
And back to, again, we've been down this road 100 times, but back to the sanctuaries. Not to beat a dead horse, but since we're getting pretty good at beating one, then let's beat that one for a while.
So
there's 700 acres up James River, which you have, your charts earlier showed was the best producing river, always has been, always will be. In this state, there's 700 acres sitting up there doing nothing.
But that sanctuary used to be 20,000, and we shrunk it down to 700, so it used to go all the way to the bridge.
It was Hantong all the way to the Nansman Ridge. You took the Hantong area and turned it into a hand scrape area.
Yeah, but it was closed below the Hantong area before. It was not open at all. It was a sanctuary.
When was that?
That was just before we made the James River. The rectal sign is very small.
Date wise, when was that?
Because
James River's been open to shaft tonguing.
Yeah. But you could not go below rectal without hand off.
When from what date on?
From 1993 to like 2004. When we started opening the hand scrapes down there. And that's when we shrunk up the part of the way for the hand scrape, left a big area in the middle, which was 2,000 to 3,000 acres, and then we shrunk it again to let the hand tongers go down below. We shrunk it down to 700 from that.
Well,
it's just very much smaller than it used to be.
Well, then let's shrink it some more.
That's a very important sanctuary for the amount of effort that's being put in there, especially since there's no rotation in that area at all.
Start a rotation. Close from the bridge down in James River and open that up for a year. And then rotate it around. Again, we're looking at options here, and the fact of cutting people's licenses is not the only one that needs to be put on the table.
Yeah, well,
That's my point. You're asking us for options, but you're telling us this is the one we need to jump onto.
Well, just let me show you a little bit of data that you got to keep in your mind on this with the amount of people that are working. If you remember last fall, the Mobs Act was slated to open, and we went out and when we did the dredge survey, we saw a lot of spat on those two areas, and we asked commission to close this one. And this one we left open, Tosek we left open. We went back to these areas this April after the harvest, and Tosek that we opened, the Pantong, before we opened, there were 150 spat per meter. After they worked for a month, we were down to 20. That's from working the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
This is the area that we left alone.
Excuse me for interrupting, but that's April. That's this past April.
This past April.
Mm-hmm. And
this is before harvest, and this is after harvest.
When I was open in January.
And so you know exclusively that the death from the spats came strictly from dredging, not from rain, fresh water, anything like that.
Well, the one we left alone, right here, that we got permission to go on and set it aside because it has such a high spat set. It had over 200 per meter. When we went back and looked at it in April, it was over 500.
So that's down.
We couldn't even see them. Some of them were so small.
So as the areas that had the increased spatsit, is that downriver?
No, they're side by side.
Side by side. Okay.
Mile or so from each other.
Mile from each other.
Mm-hmm. That's very informative.
So what are we looking at, Jim, as far as maybe possibly opening Pulse Bar a year, 2 years?
I just want to show you the whole range of them. Mm-hmm. Because this is all involved in this, use it or whatever. I mean, this is just a more fine scale look at this, because the red was in the fall and the blue is in the spring of all the sizes there at El Tosa. Because so you see that they go away when you harvest all sizes. And this was the pulse bar that we left alone, and blue is after, you know, in April. They actually got bigger and they were okay. So the harvesting definitely impacted there.
A question is, on those areas, would your opinion on the damage that occurs to the spat be the same if it was tonguing rather than a dredge?
No, I'm only showing you dredge and path.
But my question is, would your opinion be the
same?
Has it got patent on one?
So perhaps an area that had a tremendous amount of spat, perhaps that area could be open for tonguing?
It could be, except for you're talking about in an area in Mobjack, you're talking about 4 or 5 orchards per meter.
Oh, okay. I understand.
Mm-hmm. Don't you have,
this is the Great Wicomico.
Don't you have a similar number? Didn't you check Temple's Bay also?
Yeah, I'm going to show you all this.
Okay.
This is Cranes Creek. We just picked one of the bars in the Great Wicomico to go look at. This was spat, small, and market before harvest, and then this was after harvest. So the spat went from almost 60 per meter down to 10. Mm. The smalls, you see, we're not supposed to be taking smalls, but you see how much they go down. Mm-hmm. And obviously the markets go down. They can expect that. So impact of, this is again kind of showing that it blown up in the size categories, but down here are in 5 millimeter increments, so you can see that every size is being impacted by hand scrapes. This is out in Tangier, Johnson's, where we had a real good spat set. That's what it was before harvest. This is what it was after harvest. And the only thing that's happened in any of these areas is that they've been harvested with a hand scraper or dredge. This is looking at the individual ones. In Temple Bay, we did not, the season started October 1st, and we don't get to that area until the end of October. So the season was just about over, but the sanctuary right next to it, this is how many spat it had per meter, and based on how the warden were telling me how many spat they saw when they first started in Temple Bay, this is probably similar. And this is the harvest area after we're done for the season.
Yeah, that rock took a lot of pressure. There was a lot of boats there.
All of them are taking a lot of pressure from all these people. Yeah, that's the issue.
Yeah,
there's so many boats on
these
areas.
Yeah, I mean, it's just
the production of that rock was better than it was 3 years ago.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
But it doesn't leave very much fat to come back for 3 years from now.
That'll be a point that we need to mark in the sand right now to come back and take a look at.
Taking all the boats in the whole state, all the boats are putting in one little area.
Yeah, especially if we don't control the boats, all you're going to do is bring more people in, they're going to fill them all up.
Yeah.
Now, we saw a little teeny bit different in Parrots, because that season didn't start in November, and actually the spat had gotten much bigger. They were about the size of a quarter there, but they were smaller in Temple Bay. Mm. And quarter-sized spat can stand up to the harvest a whole lot better than dime-sized spat. Mm. So they actually fared pretty good.
Excuse me for interrupting, but being as you say that you know, there's so many things that we can do. We can work, we can crab, we can fish. And maybe if the season opened up a little bit later, I don't know.
Yeah, but it all depends on, sometimes the spat set that we got in Mobjack occurred really late. It didn't get there to September. Where the spat set in the Rappahannock last year was really early. It was in June. So they were much bigger. So you can't adjust the season to that. I mean, the point I'm trying to make is that harvesting impacts you for the next year and for several years down the road from just the gear alone.
So if you delayed the opening of the season because people could work doing
I'm
other
not
things.
If you happen to be lucky out and have a June spat set, which is very rare for us, that could do something for you. But we don't ever find out about spats at a time to do these things. You can't see them.
What happens if you don't ever work it?
Well, I mean, just let's work through these. I mean, Temple Bay wasn't worked, that one I showed you, and you saw how tall it was. But in the James, looking at the spat before and after, you know, that was in the Howard area, so they went down significantly. And just shell alone, just the shell that we depend on out there, I mean, you constantly hear about working the bottom. Well, the blue is before harvest and the red's after harvest, and in every case, the number of brown shell, which is where a spat can attach, has been knocked down by the harvest. And that's a lot taking orchards out. It's a lot that there's so many people working that you're putting shells off the bar onto the side areas. But in any case, it's these brown shell that we depend on for you know, every year to carry us. So when you talk about the number of boats that are out there and these gear that are out there, it's the damage that this much activity is doing with this efficient of a gear that is the issue that you're, if you want to keep a fishery healthy, you've got to shrink the time that the gear is on these bars. And at the same time, let people make a living that are in it. And if you can get the numbers down, then you actually can start thinking about getting bushels up for those that are in it, and you actually, you know, build a healthy fishery, which right now the fishery is not moving in a healthy direction because of the gear type and because of how many people have that gear type out there.
What about from a scientific standpoint? You know, you're showing all this data that the dredging is killing the spat. Is there something that could be done with the gear that would be less detrimental to spat?
Yeah, go to all handoff. You want to push handoff, it'd be great.
I'm sure you're right, but I'm asking.
What does the patent dog do?
Not nearly as bad as dredge.
But is there a modification that could be done to the dredge that would improve?
Less of them.
Well, am I mistaken or not? Years ago, when I was patent dogging years ago in the 70s, that was killing it. Now all of a sudden it didn't.
Well, the 70s you had disease going on with it. They were really bad.
I see, but really people didn't look at it.
Huh?
They didn't look at it like it should have never been open for dredging. It should have always been like it was in the Rap Island. I mean, certain things did it, you know. Because they blamed it on the patent dogs back in, but it wasn't the patent dogs.
It was disease.
I know what it was. But we got to blame for it.
I remember that.
That's why they closed.
Let me ask a question. As Mr. Kellen stated a while ago, some bars 3 years ago, and now we have a better harvest this year than there were 3 years ago. But how is that affecting the oystermen, though? I know it's more oystermen. Are oystermen getting more oysters on average per trip, or are they getting less?
Well, they have to get less. I mean, you missed the
beginning. I missed them.
No, but just people go back to the up to the start. You know, this is where we ended up. It's about 28% less harvest this year than the last year for the dredges and the handscrapes. And that's with that season that we didn't anticipate having in Pocono, the area 9 and 10.
Mm-hmm.
If that had not been added in, it would have been 35% down.
So even with the added amount of oystermen, it was the catch was still down.
Yeah, I mean that. I mean when you look at the down here, I mean this is the total catch and 6% of the harvest, you know, the 377 licenses competing for those. I don't know how many work, but and for the hand scrape, it was 69% of the harvest amongst 908 licenses.
But that last year was also caught in 4 days, where the year before last was 5 days. So
yeah, that's 12 foot first.
And, that,
and then it was down along. So you got to go by that too. Mm-hmm. I mean, York River had a lot of oysters in it the year before last. Yeah. Last year it wouldn't work at all.
It wasn't any more.
We haven't had a spat out either.
No, but I'm saying you got to do apples with apples too.
Mm-hmm. 30,000 bushels in York River.
I mean, certain areas in the river produce a lot more oysters than other areas.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you also have to have spatsets in those in order for them to do it.
Yeah, I know that.
And you have to protect the spatsets somewhat, and that's the one thing about the rotation is it gives these areas 2 years of rest. Spatsets can get big enough to get out being damaged, but to the degree that they get damaged as a spat.
So in your opinion, if you work a rock every year, then that these numbers here you've been showing us is going to continuously go down. Yeah. It just ain't going to stand the pressure.
So now the point of grip.
Right.
On another point, has staff given any consideration to the, we're going to get a political outfall from this.
Yeah.
I spent more time in Richmond this year dealing with issues related to oysters than I have since I've been in the business. This agency in the budget here that we're all working for was under the most pressure of any agency in Richmond. What's gonna be our argument on our replenishment money when we go down this whole road again?
We still, even if we do that, the control day, which we're still gonna have way too many people in pressure.
I understand that, but are you better off with where we're at in your $2 million, or are we, I mean, we've got every coastal delegate in the state questioning what we're doing. I just, real world, am extremely concerned and want to at least voice my opinion that I think we'll be in serious jeopardy on our replenishment program when all of this comes to fruition in October, and we've got the whole flurry of people that's going to run to their legislators. We know that's going to happen. I mean, we know that's going to happen. I just, it really concerns me where we're going to be in Richmond with this activity. And having done as much of it as I have, looking a delegate in the face, like this year, we were trying to get more money and being able to justify when they look at you and say, well, I'm hearing from all the people in my district that they're losing their license. We know it's not all of them, but the reality is their perception is it's all of them. I think we've got to consider that and have a plan of how we're going to deal with it. I mean, Miss Jane's here. She knows you were hearing what was coming out of Richmond. I mean, we were fighting for our life up there this year on money, and we kept hearing this over and over, how much feedback had come back to the legislators from their constituency on this issue. And I just think that needs to be considered and thought about away from the practicality of it. Just coming off the heels of the fight last year and what was overturned. I mean, some of these guys were up there on the Waterman's Day, and you were hearing it. I mean, it was and a lot of it was coming from the administration, from the governor's office itself. This agency, our industry's on a high point. But yet this agency, we've got a lot of work to do to build up, you know, the investment in what we're trying to do, because it's not easy right now trying to hold on to funding or get more funding from VMRC right now. I mean, it is tough.
Well, one thing, what you're saying, it concerns me, because we're this group right here, and when this thing is presented to VMRC, to their meeting, it's like it's We're the advisory group. It's like we're making the advice to staff that this is what the industry wants. And then the industry sits over there and goes to all their delegates and say, this is all wrong. You're taking jobs away from us. And we're the ones that are looking like, you know, we're being advised by staff to do this, and we're the ones that are making a recommendation to take license away from people that are honorable people that haven't done anything wrong. And that's precisely why I was saying that we need to focus on these people that are abusing the privilege. This is all on our shoulders.
Well, I think last year we voted not to do nothing, not to cut any.
I understand, but it was presented to them, and then they didn't.
Well, they didn't do what we suggested.
Yeah. So I mean, what makes you think it's going to be any different this time? What makes you think it's going to be different?
Staff needs to provide this committee with all the information that's up there, but not tell us the decision that we need to make. If we want to present to the commission that they closed the whole fishery, that's this committee's recommendation. If we want to present to the commission that you open every oyster rock in the state of Virginia, that and everyone votes yes on it, or the majority votes yes, that is this committee's position and recommendation. Whether the commission takes it and runs with it, that's their choice. And for them to take staff's recommendation, our recommendation, and whatever else comes down the line as far as information, and make the best, what they feel to be the best proper educated decision. Not for us to argue with staff over staff trying to get us to follow their recommendation. Staff is staff, and this committee is this committee. And that line needs to be set, and this committee needs to stand up and do what they think they need to do. Staff needs to do what they need to do, and the commission needs to step forward and decide with the information that's given them from both parties. Not sit here for the next 5 months and argue with staff so that we can maybe get a joint recommendation that meets both staff and this committee. Because that's what we did last year, and as Mr. Harding just said, we came up with the recommendation to leave things as they were. That got presented to the commission in about 45 seconds, and then staff went on to recommend with the data they had, and the rest is history.
Got a commission meeting in, I want to say either January or February. Didn't the commissioner state some direction he wanted us to take on this? Yeah. Do you know what that was?
They were more from the control day.
And that they wanted to commit, I believe it was Commissioner Zedrin requested that this committee come up with its specific recommendation that the decision be turned back to this committee. That was the recommendation.
We look at the control date, and that's what.
And I'm not saying that didn't include looking at the control date, but they wanted something specific from this committee that is made up of harvesters, packers, people throughout the industry. That's where they wanted the decision to come from. That's what was decided at that meeting in January. It was thrown back to this committee to make a solid recommendation. And that's what we need to do.
Do you think there's any chance that we could lose some funding because of poor harvest management with this?
Well, yes. Somebody's going to look at some point when we've got it all.
And the problem in Richmond is when you add politics into the situation, it's not always the exact. It's a lot of perceptions there, and you know, whoever's got the most heat on somebody and what they're hearing the most of. And, you know, unfortunately, this agency's got issues up there right now. And, yes, that does concern me gravely.
Yeah, that concerns me also. But one way I look at it as a waterman, I know industry needs oysters. And you have to have oysters to survive. And so do watermen. But if Kellum Seafood needs 1,000 bushels, are we better with 1,000 people catching one bushel or 100 people catching 10 bushels?
And I'm, you know, I'm not here to argue that. I mean, a lot of that's got to be made at the waterman's level, but.
And that will take care of itself because 1,000 people aren't going to go catch one bushel.
but at the Richmond side of it, it's looked at as how many people, you know, how many jobs are we creating? Not just at your level, my level, all the way around. That's
taking jobs away is a big, big deal.
Jim, mm-hmm. Rod your head.
I know that I sit out here as an observer, but you know, I've been watching this for 30 years now. The point that you two gentlemen make, which is sort of subtle in between, is in fact the knife that you're sitting on. One person who buys, there is written in the sort of the constitution of the state that you follow it down. Shows that in fact you can manage a common property resource for the best outcome for everyone by limiting access to it. And in fact, we regularly do this in federal fisheries now. And there are some, if you look at probably what are the arguably the best managed fisheries in the federal arena, surf clams, co-ops, scallops, they are all limited entry. Well, how do you get away with that? It's a common property resource because in between you have an agency that is tasked with providing an argument that says, how can we get the best of this by managing it in a particular way? And what you two gentlemen said is actually the crux of this. If I want to buy a license and I can't, even if I have no intention of fishing at all, I can go to my representative and I say that my right is being usurped. And that sets off a whole fire trail which finally comes back to it. On the other hand, if you have a situation where you decide, as a group of sort of learned industry men, and you've got a couple hundred years worth of experience sitting up there, that the best number is probably, I'll choose a number out of thin air, about 500 licenses, and that these guys each produce a minimum of 500 bushels a year. If you look at the cash flow through the situation, people have got stabilized jobs. Because they've got stabilized jobs, they can stay in this industry for a long time. And that's everybody from the guy who's buying the boat to repairing the boat to fishing to whatever. An economist would tell you that that's probably a much better argument in terms of providing dollars into the economy. If I'm having an argument with my representative at that point in time, the argument is not that that guy can't get a license. The argument is that the common good, which is the most stable part of the economy going into the tax revenue, is to limit the number of people that are going in. The conversation that you're having is this extraordinarily complicated piece in the middle. It's, if you look at how federal fisheries have developed, they've done this over the last 25 years, and they're still muddled with it. But the fact that this is hard, you're not the first ones to come across. But I think the debate that you have, and you two gentlemen have put the two end members on this, is the purpose of this fishery to provide a bit of employment to the largest number, which is a politically acceptable endpoint, even if it doesn't maximize the economy? Or is the purpose of what we're doing trying to develop an enterprise that produces not jobs, but the most taxes and the most income, and puts the most back into the economy so that you can keep it going in a sustainable manner? The difference between those two is very subtle, but it's precisely your two points. And so when Tommy goes to the General Assembly and gets a sale because people are losing jobs, what he doesn't have, which you could probably get out of these numbers, is something that says, at the moment, when I'm sitting here doing the numbers, the number of people 150 people, you are in fact generating 95% of all of this. If there's something that you want to sort of preserve, it's those people. Don't put them in jeopardy for all of the others. So the argument that you would make is, Mr. Delegate, Mr. Senator, what we're proposing here is to stabilize the core of this industry, to stabilize 95% of the income for these people who are really generating it. We realize that others will be offended by this. But in terms of stability, we've spent 20 years building this. The economic argument is this is the piece we should look after. And if you have to offend somebody, so be it. But that's the trade-off that you have to make. I mean, that's the dolls argument. The other one is the people argument. And the challenge that you gentlemen have is that when you look at this, is this a dollars argument or is this a people argument? Because that's going to decide which way you're going to go here.
Thank you.
I mean, it isn't easy. There's no right answer to it, but you have to decide which one you're going to do.
Well, I can appreciate what you're saying, but I think every year that's gone back for the last two decades, there's always been a probably 70, 50, 60 or 70 or 80% of the production has the bulk of the production has come from 60 or 70% of the people who actually work out there, because not everybody's got the same work ethic, you know. And that's just like me. I spent 4 years playing football for Florida State. Don't everybody get to go to Florida State and play football? Not everybody's created equal. And this same thing out for oystermen. I mean, there's people over here that I can look at, and I know they can go out there and just tear them up with tongs, and there's some people like me. I'm old. I can't do that no more. But, you know, that's kind of the way it is, and I think it's been like that for the last few decades. Don't everybody produce the same amount. I've worked next to people over at Tyler's Beach, and my cousin and I, we'd sit over at work, and we would catch more by us one boat. We'd catch more than five or six of them put together. You know, so it's not uncommon for there to be a large group of people that aren't very productive. But the ones that aren't productive, why are we so worried about them? They're not catching anything. I don't understand it. I mean, you're taking privilege away from an honorable person, and I can certainly understand they go over it and raise hell over to Richmond about they're losing their job, and I'm sure no politician wants to be an advocate of taking somebody's livelihood away. And all of these people we're talking about, they're just catching a handful of stuff. What they're catching doesn't amount to anything. What are we worried about them so much for? I don't understand it. I mean, it's just like to advocate taking something away. But
when we took that back last year, taking
well, what percentage of this resource is being worked? That was a question that was asked at the last committee meeting, and that would fit a lot into what Mr. Mann is speaking of. If these roughly 558 people that he mentioned are worked, if there's 20% of the resource being worked and 80% sitting there being latent, then you know maybe we can fit the rest of these people in if we get 50 or 60% of the resource available to be worked. I mean,
there's not unused places that aren't in a rotation.
There's sanctuaries. The rotational areas are a 3-year sanctuary.
They're only sanctuary. 1 year out of 3.
Okay, so they're a 2-year and 8-month sanctuary. And again, my question is the people aren't the only aspect in this problem that can be tweaked. We can just as easily tweak this resource, the availability of bottom to work on, as we can tweak the number of people to work on it. And there's nothing holding those sanctuaries into sanctuary other than staff at VMRC.
Well, and a biological reason that they are.
And I don't doubt that a bit. But again, on that note, 700 acres of oysters sitting up James River, just to use Wreck Shoals as an example, isn't helping the rest of the state as a sanctuary. Yeah, it's not no doubt it's helping James River, but does it take 700 acres of oysters to help James River? To help propagate to propagate James River, it takes more than 700 acres of oysters.
I mean, we've seen a remarkable recovery in the Rectional Sanctuary since leaving it alone. So it's certainly, we had the best pass that we've ever seen last year. So.
But did they? I mean, every one of them didn't come from wrecked shoals, though. But you don't know that. I mean, what about all the 3-inch oysters that were laid on the bottom at Dog Shoals, at High Shoals, at everywhere else that were caught, the 80,000 bushels that were caught there in 2016? They had a lot to do with this bat set, just as much as the 700 acres worth of oysters sitting up there on wrecked shoals. They're not the only ones spawning and reproducing in this river. So they.
So we
don't need
to draw that line, and I think you don't want to take a chance on it. The very small sanctuaries that we have in the state
that's probably what
not
add a that's
lot.
Probably roughly what a third of James River productive bottom.
No, 10% or 20% or 5% to 10%.
So 5 to 10%. Of the bottom in James River is sanctuary.
Is there one sanctuary? Yeah. It certainly has gone more than 5%.
If that sanctuary was, if there was an allowance for tonguing on that sanctuary, would that be more tolerable than dredging?
No.
And see, that's sanctuary. And that's one, that is your opinion, that's you
but
saying
that's
no.
Not really the question.
That's
tonguing, I mean, as you told me, tonguing would be a lot less damaging to spat and so forth, and you've said there's a lot of spat there. That would be less damaging to the bottom than dredging, is that?
They're big oysters there.
Oh, there's no spat there?
The whole river has a better spat set, but there's not more spat. Wrecked shoals usually has a relatively, in comparison to the sea rocks, it's a relatively low spat.
I mean, wrecked shoals, when I first started in business, that's the only place I planted seed from was wrecked shoals. It was always wrapped up.
It doesn't do seed like that anymore.
Really?
There's more big oysters.
That's what we used to work.
Well, I mean,
we used to get like an 800 count oyster there.
Sea rocks were way down the river too. But
yeah, I'll agree.
But disease still impacts those oysters.
You know, it seems like to me what you're saying, the dredge is the damaging problem we've got for what you're after right now. Is that correct?
Well,
the dredge is the problem.
The hand scrape is a very efficient gear.
Sure it is.
It does the structure on the bottom. So you have to manage it to minimize the structure by giving some rest.
Has anyone tried to modify it or change things to see if it can be come to a point where it will not damage the spat at that point? Larger dredges, lighter dredges. Large dredges are far less damaging to these rocks than a narrow dredge. The smaller the dredge, the more it digs. I have them on my private ground, and I can take some of the guys will use the 22-inch dredge, and they just tear everything up. They turn everything to chowder, tear the shells up. The larger dredges, when you go back in areas where they work, it's a whole bit of difference.
Well, the larger dredges are lighter. I mean, right now, they've added so much weight to the hand scrapes.
That's right.
That they weigh as much as the big
dredge. Yeah. I say a 32-inch dredge, you know, you got to go to a 7-8-foot dredge. But the dredge doesn't go down the hole. It tends to go along the bottom. Well, a narrow dredge, she'll catch all the little hooks, and the bottom is nothing true. It's nothing but hills and holes and gullies, I guess. Most everybody should know that.
Well, what you said about the weight on a dredge, can there be a limitation on the weight? I mean, there used to be a weight limit on dredge, didn't there?
I mean, we certainly can. It can be one of the things that we do is to lighten the dredges, I think.
Heavy divers, most people using divers.
Everybody using divers is very, very heavy.
Well, without a diver, you're not going to catch much.
Well, I think all that came from deep water. You know, anything, you know, 28 foot to 32 foot, you know, where a lot of oysters are caught, you can't catch them with a light a scrape. You just can't. Not first thing that's going to happen, the dredge is going to turn over 50% of the time when it goes down in there. It's a very difficult.
Light dredge.
Yeah, light dredge. You can't do it. I mean, it's just difficult. But I know, like a sturgeon off on the edge in that deep water, yeah, it takes a heavy dredge to catch them, man. Yeah.
Yeah. Deeper the water.
Yeah, it does.
But didn't that basically change your saying, deep water?
Hmm?
dangerous things, the deepest?
That's why we use deep, heavy pressure there.
Yeah.
You don't...
4 foot.
You don't have deep water in Rappahannock or James or anything like that?
Yeah. But Tangier saw just as much damage as from those grasses as we saw at the other places. Mm-hmm. It's fat and small and everything.
But that's all big dredges, too. That's not small dredges.
Would it be possible to get VIMS or somebody to experiment and set them a place aside and see if they could come up? It would make a difference. And this is the major problem with hand scraping and dredging.
We can't duplicate the amount of turns.
You have to change the definition of a hand scrape from 22 inches. That's over 6.
You know, where this question comes up about the value of Rack Shoal Sanctuary every meeting. Has any recent study been done on the larval set by VIMS to determine where the spat is actually going?
I mean, there's the same gyre that has always been thought about in the James. There's no reason to think that that's changed.
Well, the ship, the idle fleet is no longer there.
Yeah, that's so there's not any much above there.
Do what?
There's not much above there. So there wouldn't be any portion coming from.
But that might change the tide flow.
Oh, it definitely changed that.
You got more salt water.
100 boats to 9.
It seems to me it'd be appropriate to go in and do a current study. Ask for that.
I'm sure Rod would love to. There's just not much money for doing stuff like that.
I mean, when we put the clam sanctuary here at Middle Grand Light, VIMS did a pretty extensive study there to determine where the larval set was going to be. I don't recall that anything's been done since the 50s in the James River on the tide flow or where the larvae ends up. Well, at the time that we were, I guess, validating or synchronizing the models, there was a lot of dye testing that went on and so forth. I mean, has any of that been done recent years?
The models were all done.
I mean, you put bad data in the model, you get bad data out, you know. Where you don't need to do the field studies?
Well, essentially what you do is you can by lots of sort of standard buoys around here, high gauges and that kind of thing. So there are multiple ways to calibrate the three-dimensional computer models. That don't require you to spend time dipping dye over the side and chasing it around, because the calibration and other methods that are much more cost-efficient. The specific question that you asked, where does the water go with it? On Rec Show, on QI1, QI15, August 1, August 15, and so on, has not been run. It's technically possible to do it. It's not simple to do it because the models are so complicated, and the computing power that's needed to run these things is enormous. I mean, the standard run in the James River now, the cells are hundreds of meters, the layers are a few meters. Going up over Rack Shoal, the standard model up there now has probably got 10 layers in it. So if you can imagine the computational problem that you have, having probably half a million cells in here, then you progress them every 30 minutes. Keep track of that over a period of 6 months and change 12 variables. That's what you start with.
What is the model telling us about Rack Shoals, the value of Rack Shoals? 700 acres it's left.
It hasn't been run as a specific model in the last few years.
Why not? I mean, Seems to me that's a pretty important question.
Like everything else, Roy.
Money?
I hate to be crass about it, but if I look at what funds our modeling group, it's ship canals, it's access to the port down here, it's naval access so that you can get Nimitz class carriers in there, and those conversations in terms of impact start in billions of dollars and go upwards. And I mean, with all due respect, those of us are sitting in this room have a small change in this.
Well, I understand that.
Advisory services, they always got involved with scallops. Why don't they get involved with the oysters?
Because the scallops are set up funded by the federal research set aside.
Oh, I got you.
And the research set aside party was on the order of $10 to $20 million a year. I think we should like to look at that.
Well, the 700 acres may not be of any value to reproduction. The argument way back when was that the gyro took the spat out of the James River and it was serving Hampton Roads more than it was the reaches of the James River from the bridge up. That was the old theory, you know?
The old theory, there's a gyro in Burwell Bay that actually just goes round and round in circles. There is also that that comes down the river and then essentially it gets moved back up the river because of this pumping system that you see out of point formed by the incoming tide, where you see the foam lines. And that's essentially the surface water being taken back down, carried back up the river, and it's basically it issues up over James, over Wreck Shoal, which is sort of the classic argument as to why Wreck Shoal historically, in 150 years, was always so productive. But basically, what it did is it caught a lot of the stuff that went downstream and then came back up. Very complex system out there in terms of where the water goes. And you all know that anyway.
Well, I'm like Jim. I wouldn't want to gamble with it, but it seems like to me that that's an important question to get answered. With the scientists sitting over here at BIMS doing nothing.
I don't think we can sit around this year like we did last year and made the decision to go status quo. I think we're going to have to make some tough decisions and come up with something. Or, as the commissioner stated at the meeting, I think the commission's going to do something if we don't. It's not going to be an easy choice.
Jim, you got any Patton Tong areas? Open it up next year. I didn't get a good look.
Same area.
Okay. Well, you agree that Patton Tong does less damage on bottom. Is it any way that we can open up?
It only does less damage if the fishery stays as small as it is. But if you've got, I mean, with this, we jumped from 7 Patton Tongers to 44 last year on the same area. So it will have an impact as the numbers get higher.
Over there at 44, how many worked?
Most of them.
Four of us.
Yeah. Most of them worked. Not every day.
Mm-hmm. That's because we didn't want to go to James River. That was the only thing open in our area. That's why we did it.
But I'm just saying, if you want to count, maybe some way the reduction is, you know, your hand scrapes your problems. Can you close some hand scrape, not close them, but have hand scrape areas revert to Patton Tong?
Sure.
You know, deep water.
Put more people out of business doing that than you will. Then you will lower the numbers.
How so?
Because they're not going to have boats.
I don't know if
they're they still have areas to hand scrape in, though.
I don't know if there's 100 sets of Patton Tongs in the state.
Yeah.
I mean, you would have to take something away from a hand scrape.
Well, they took it all from us.
There's a limit in regulation on the teeth and the hand scrape. Mm-hmm. The length of the teeth.
I think it's the width of the bar.
Width of the bar.
Width
of the inside, yeah. 20,
but not 20, the teeth.
No, not
the teeth.
Is there a weight limit on the Patton Tong?
100 pounds used to be.
It's still in the code.
It's not enforced, but it's there.
It's there.
It's not enforced.
100 pounds
but it's
used to be.
It's still there. It's still in the code. Mm-hmm.
Right. There's nothing on a hand scrape or a dredge.
Uh-huh. It's width.
Just width.
I think it is 100 pounds on a dredge.
Oh.
seeing obvious damage from it, can't pressure be applied to get it enforced? I mean, you've reported.
Well, and the patent, we're not seeing obvious damage. Yeah. And that one, because what we see in patent on is that. I don't know if there's that many.
I was talking about hand spray.
You know, that's, you know, we can.
I see a bunch of them.
The question will be, it's two-sided. If you lower the efficiency by lighting them up, and normally they would be able to finish in 2 hours, and because you've lowered the efficiency with the lighter dreads, they're out there churning that same bottom for 6 hours, then you actually hurt them. There's some advantage to being fast and efficient and getting out of there. But the problem is that there's too many of them on there.
What you'd be doing then, you'd be making deep water areas a sanctuary because nobody would be able to work them. And all the boats then would concentrate on all the shallow areas, which may even be more devastating.
Yeah. That's right. Are we precluded from a 3-foot dredge by code?
As long as you don't call it a dredge. If you call it a dredge, you can't use a 2-inch device if you call it a dredge by code.
Just talking out loud here and thinking about what Mr. Green said. If you've got an 8-bushel limit and you used a 3-foot dredge with a weight limit, it would seem to me you're going to catch your limit quicker with less pressure per square, whatever measurement you want to use. Would we do less damage to the resource? Because that would still take away the issue of the little light dredge flipping up or whatever. Would you do less damage to the bottom?
It would take several years doing the time box surveys like we do now to see if things change.
I mean, in theory, that makes sense. Because the dredge is going to be on the bottom less time because you're going to cover more area and catch them quicker, and you're not going to have as much weight.
It's harder to dig in the bottom with a wide dredge versus a small dredge.
Yeah, but I don't think it's digging the bottom that causes as much trouble as just contact, shell-to-shell contact as they're drug along in a bag, and I don't think that's going to change. The shells rumbling each other was fast, but that killed them.
Well, didn't you have a study in Tangier on the dredge, the damage on the bottom? Was just as bad.
Yeah. And that's deep water where they ought to be lighter. I mean, it's just a fact of this type of harvest. You pay for the efficiency and damage to the bar, and so it's better to control the amount of people and what you want to get off that than it is to try to. The gear's going to damage. The rotation has turned out to be the best that we see on, given areas time to recover. It all depends for us to be successful. We've got to have stat sets, pretty repeatable in these areas. When we go into an area time period like we had in 13 and 14, we didn't get any stat sets, then it didn't make a difference what was going on. Have I set them alone? Because there wasn't any spat set anywhere. 15, now we've seen the spat set again, but we're going to be dealing with poor numbers again this year and 1,124 potential people.
Well, no matter what we do, it's going to be 1,100 and some people until December, right?
Until December, yeah. Mm-hmm. I wish it
did. And it's pretty much over then anyway, except for the yacht road.
Are y'all looking at Friday's 4-day week again, or?
This is the elephant in the room. You don't really go on the rest of your regulations that you see. We certainly will have to do it this year, but whether you have to take another day off you know, to, because things are going to go down.
You mean going 3 days?
3 days or lowering the bushel amendment. They're going to be less this year than they was last year.
Look, if you start the season a little later, you know, bad weather will take care of some of that, won't it?
The industry, I mean, Virginia industry needs to have product in October, and it's pretty important to spread the harvest over multiple months like we have been doing to keep product out there.
So the private sector doesn't accomplish any of that at all?
No, it's wiped out by them. For us to maintain our place in the market, and it'll be more important this year than ever, that's the, since the oil spill, the charging factor for us to stay out front is having resource that month before anyone else has it. Maryland only has hand tongue the month of October, then they go dredge November 1st. And because of the time and temperature regulations, the Gulf really doesn't kick up now until November because of their water temperature and all this warm water harvest, they're precluded from getting started early.
Maryland's going to see a big drop in their harvest this year.
Yeah. And just, I'm going to say this, it's this year more than ever, the bushel limit is going to be important because there's a limit to how cheap anyone can work. You're already at the minimum with the bushel limit in Virginia now. Richie, how many folks from the Gulf have called you wanting to sell you oysters this fall that you haven't heard from for 5 or 6 years?
Plenty.
We have got to keep the bushel limit where it's at because I can't afford to pay $100 a bushel. You can't afford to pay, and no waterman can afford to go for any less than they're going now.
Exactly.
So we've got to keep that in mind as we go forward because the situation in the Gulf is – five and six boats loading a tractor trailer compared to us with 16 bushels to a boat. So whatever we do, we've got to keep in mind that the bushel limits cannot go any less than what they are and keep us in the market.
But that'll still, as Jim was stating, we may have to cut another day out. If we go to 3 days a week, that's still going to.
Yeah, and you drive markets. I mean, you know, with the 4-day work week, it worked fine and we made it. But, you know, how many days do I cut a customer out or even a waterman that sells to a direct customer? How many days do you cut out before he says, I need oysters 5 days a week and move on to the other options they have? And there again, it doesn't matter how you slice it. A waterman is good. I mean, I'm preaching to the choir here, but just, I mean, you've got to have a certain amount of money to be able to exist. You just, I don't see where limits and going to 3 days a week, how you can survive.
Then you end up working the bad days that you shouldn't work.
Right. Yeah. If you have bad days, you may not work at all.
Don't
blow
one
in 3 days.
Yeah.
Yeah. At one time, I was dealing with some people up in Delaware, and they had tags. They were issued a certain amount of tags, and they were allowed to catch a certain amount of oysters, and that was it. They gave them the tags, and that was it. Is that something that's feasible?
Well,
I mean,
they didn't
work any day, but they just had the tags, and once they caught the tags up, that was it.
And it put them out of the market. When I was 10 years ago, Delaware was a force in this industry, and that procedure has put them – I don't know about you. I hadn't had a Delaware oyster in – six or something. I mean, it's a derby for about 10 days, and
that's over with.
Yeah.
So it's all at once. It's all or nothing. And we're looking at a sustainable industry.
And, you know, and if you did that, you could really look at part-time waterman wanting to get out there for that first week and just grind as hard as they could.
Well, really put them back in.
Yeah, exactly. I know in 4 days when we first discussed it, I don't know about Tommy, but I was scratching my head. Didn't know whether it was going to work or not. Well, we made it work, but I can tell you, if you go 3 days, and that's like Tommy, if you tell somebody you don't have oysters, like the Gulf's got plenty now, we're done. We're out of the market. They've got it. There's no way we can do that.
Yeah, that's what's happening with the crabs.
What kind of decline are you looking at in the big oyster count this year? I mean,
well, it'll be. I mean, this is, we ended up with about 25% down for this year, and it's going to be down again for the year coming. I mean, what popped us up a little bit to get us to that 25% was having that Pocono area that won't be open this year.
You take that out. What is that?
We were 35% down last year.
If you took that out, we'd be down 35%?
Left from last year.
You're not opening up Pocomoke at all this year? Pocomoke's not going to be open? Shell Rock and all that?
I mean, we can do this, but right now, from what we're seeing, I think we've got to switch to a three-year rotation at Tanger Pocomoke. Because there is nothing in Shell Rock right now. We got no set.
I know. I mean, that place has been great for years.
I know, but it's gone now.
I know. I'm just as concerned as you are over that. Have you checked it at all this summer?
Not this summer, but we checked it in the fall. I'm figuring that the Tangier was okay. We got some set in Tangier. We need to get set in football. Mm-hmm.
Jim, you think Area 4 is going to be better than 2 in the wraparound?
Yeah. Area 4 will be as good or
it was last time.
Better than Temple Bay. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
2 won't quite be as good as
mm-hmm.
3, but Temple
Bay. Not as big an area, yeah. Yeah.
2 will be better than 3.
I think so.
Well, the problem is that 2, we worked it on 2 years ago.
Yeah, last time. Yeah.
So they're not quite as big.
It'd be good.
I'm pretty sure that last time. Yeah.
It's a lot more places there to work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the James is going to be down that much? Yeah.
Looking at how small the oysters are in there.
I'm told it's a big set in there.
It was a great set, but they're not going to make the market size this year.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We could get it to market size in a year, no, we wouldn't be talking about any of this stuff.
They're going to switch over to trip loads.
Yeah,
that's
good.
Yeah. That would solve all our problems. We could get that out there on the rock.
We would need some money to come up with that.
I know.
This shows the size of the chamber here.
14, 18, what is it back in there?
The majority of what's out there is less than 45 millimeters, which is a little bit and a quarter. There's no way they'll win. The only thing you got to work with for this year is down this end coming in that place into the fishery.
2 year rotation.
I knew it more like it. It'll still be all right. I mean, 70,000 bushels, that's still great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, from the hands right there. That's just the hands right there.
We see the options the staff has given us. I mean, any ideas, any option anyone has, no matter how far-fetched it is, we can throw it out there and look at it. Like I was thinking driving down here today, if we have 1,100 oysters, we have 450 that carry the load mainly. What about giving those 450 an 8-bushel limit, the rest of them a 4-bushel limit, as people in the 450 range start to get out of the fishery, the rest could work their way in?
I mean, that's just one thought.
Go back to that chart, Jim, of how that chart you have of the percentage with the harvest and the
have it broken down by
projection.
It was the number of days fished and how many it was a red chart, I think.
This one?
Days
fished is what we did last year.
Yeah.
It's too busted. What she's saying is set a quota
on the oysters for people, just like they did with the crab fishery. You know, some people got 500 licenses, some people got 300 licenses.
That's right.
And based on what they were doing. And that way you wouldn't have to be.
Got rid of a lot, didn't it?
Bushels at the bottom.
Yes.
That way you wouldn't have to be concerned about taking somebody's livelihood. If they were only catching a small amount anyway, that they still wouldn't be there. They might not create the problems up in Richmond that you experienced last year, perhaps.
And I don't think that extra 20% is, you know, is really in it for their livelihood.
The issue with the control date is you've got guys in that number when they go to Richmond that work more than 3 or 4 days that were, you've got producers in that number. And, I mean, the commission did do something last year, and it got over, I mean, by political pressure and support, it got overturned. And that's what's by, I just don't know how we're going to fare in Richmond with another year of that. I mean, you guys that were up there serving lunch, that's all you heard. That's all everyone was talking about. I mean, it was.
They don't hear the same thing again. More been through it once. Why do it again?
Well, this is a different. Using control data is something we warned about this. I mean, it was in the regulation from July 1st, 2014, that if you came in after that, you would not be considered. Says would not be considered.
So it's 558 people. Am I doing my math right? That are 50 or above. Did you have that somewhere?
Yeah.
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 What is it?
558.
That's pretty controlled.
No, it's 558 people who landed 50 or more bushels in the season.
User fees. Right.
Pretty controlled.
Got 50 more bushels in the season. They ain't nothing.
The problem with these guys who don't work many days have a lot of time to go to Richmond.
I'm a professional lobbyist.
I mean, on that note of the 50 bushels a day, as someone just said, that's one bushel a day every day of the season. In the code of Virginia, every resident of the state of Virginia during the oyster season is allowed to take one bushel without having a license.
I mean,
so,
by hand-tong,
yeah, by hand-tong, but then every resident in the state of Virginia has the potential to fit in that column of 50 bushels. So, but,
I mean, that's just a, that was just an obvious break in both of them.
It's not,
you haven't got to use that?
No, I'm just throwing that out there that.
What's the difference in the 144 people that had 0 days and the number of 21 that we had pre-control?
There's 144 that have zeros of people that came in after the control
date. After the control date.
Didn't work last year.
So that's the number I was speaking of, the people that were flipping out that they had to buy a user fee.
Yeah, yeah.
Or
where over here, what we did in that one grab is we took everybody that had user fees out of this group and said, had they harvested a single day in that period? Since they had a user fee. There are 21 of them.
And what's your idea with keeping them out in that would free up 21 licenses for potentially 21, 18-year-olds? It's going to be a whole lot easier for someone to buy a license that from someone that's never used it than it is from someone that's ever used it. Why?
Because that at least got us down a little bit lower. I mean, we're still in the 700 and something.
748 with 42
with
7.2.
725 or whatever that would be.
721,
yeah.
How many bushels a year does this affect? Well, how many bushels? Taking these people that are less than 50 bushels out, do you actually total it all up between?
Of these user fee people?
Yes.
But this is after the control date.
Okay.
131.
So, I mean, right. It was
This is the one before the control date that I'm looking at. I have up now, but that's their total production was 76% of the harvest. These higher roller people here were 76% of the harvest.
Once they caught at least 50 bushels.
Yeah.
I was just trying to see how many bushels you were taking out a year.
Not very much. I mean, but you do, I mean, if, with the control date, you take out this whole group, everything, take 24% of the harvest. Right.
Do you have, can you email this to us?
Anything else for us, Jim?
If somebody wants to make a motion, they can, but I don't think anybody here is honestly ready to make one yet.
No.
Mm-hmm. So. I think it's a lot to think about, a lot to discuss.
Yeah. I can send you all a PowerPoint.
Yeah, I'd love to have one.
Yes, great.
The risk of running my mouth, and if I do say shout, please, you have an enormous number of very difficult things to think about here. And if anybody said, oh, that's good, I'd say you haven't thought about it enough. But the comments that you've all made, I think, set us ahead several quite different paths. And you have to decide which one you're going to go down. A number of comments that have been made here actually support the idea of adding a limited entry fishery. That runs over a lot of things that you've accepted as part of this industry for a long time. Let's follow that argument for one. What's the problem with a limited entry fishery? If the limited entry fishery will take the vast majority of this harvest and keep the economy going, because let's face it, if you can't sell your product, a lot of these other guys are out of business. So the question is, could you have a limited entry construct that will keep the whole Virginia market going? The problem with limited entries is, how do you get new people into it? If you've got to wait for somebody to die, can you will your quota to someone else, or do you have a situation where you auction off quota when somebody... So that's one way. And if you're going to go down the road of taking people out of it, you have by de facto developed a limited entry fishery. So when you get into this debate about, I'm standing in front of the delegate who's shouting at me because I can't get one of these, the response to that is that it's an economic issue and there is a mechanism for people to get into it, but it's not an open fishery for economic stability reasons. So if you're going to go down that, there's actually a number of different arguments that you need to follow. The debate about if we change the areas that were open, could we increase production? My personal view is you can't, but I will give you an argument that says, let's say we could increase production by 10 or 20%. What do you think it would do here? Do you think that a lot of those people who still don't participate would come into it or not? I suspect it probably wouldn't make a hell of a lot of difference.
Nope.
So the real issue there is, for all of you gentlemen who make your living by doing this throughout the season, how much of a difference is it going to make to you in your income? Is it a big difference, a small difference? How do you manage that for, to use your terms, stability over long periods of time? Not only stability in the resource, but stability in terms of what these two gentlemen are doing in terms of looking at the national market, in terms of how they're going to sell your product at an upscale price, because it's better than the crap that comes out of the gut. Okay? Now that's a very different situation to where you are at the moment. And then the other end of it is, you're still going to have this political problem of if you use a control date, how are you going to make a succinct argument which every one of you could stand in front of an elected delegate and say, I understand the trade-offs here, but I think the control date and limiting entry is a good thing to do because
right at the end of that sentence. Because if you're going to use these sorts of limited access things to ensure that, quite frankly, there's enough product to go around, as you said, there's no point in having an 8-bushel limit if it's only 3 days a week. You're really looking at an 8-bushel limit 4 days a week, and below that, your business goes all belly up, and then nobody makes any money. So the question that you have there is, can you fill in the end of the sentence? How am I going to ensure that those people who've been the core of the industry for all of these years, how can we ensure that we've managed to keep them in business? Because at least watching what I've seen here, I don't wish to disrespect the other people who buy licenses, but those core people are really what you're talking about. And that's again, slightly different. But those are the things that I think you sort of need to ask yourself, and then ask, how do you manipulate this to do those different options? Those are really difficult questions.
Yeah, I know for me, just speaking for myself, I guess I can speak for everybody up here, industry, you know, what we're all looking for is sustainability.
Well, the biggest concern, all of these numbers concern me, and it might not sound like it here. I'm very conservation-minded. I got kids that I hope do this. We're in our fifth generation, and I hope it goes 10. But one of my five biggest producers of Oysterman, I just heard him in the hallway say he was 60 years old. That keeps me up at night. And if you look at the demographics of the producers, these numbers to the right, you start pull. I'm not going to tell your age. Yeah. You told me out. No.
I'm still going strong.
I think this issue about how you encourage new people to come into this fishery, I mean, I know that there's a lot of tradition and a lot of it's passed down, and it's an incredibly important part of what you do. But if you start limiting entry, rule set as to how you deal with licenses over a period of time rather than just putting them up for auction. I'll give you an extreme example. About 3 months ago, one of the investment banks in New York, the top scallop from a flounder, bought up 7 scallop licenses out of New Bedford. They had to find New Bedford on the map. The point is they look upon it as an investment, and they really don't give a damn about the people in it. They're looking at short-term returns. It's just like buying biotech stocks. That's not how Virginia works. If you have a son and you want to go along, I'm sure that many of you other gentlemen do it. If you're going to think about this, you have to start thinking about how you're going to preserve that part of society so that you can get better people to come into it. You, sir, are sitting up there as a second generation, third generation. How are you going to do that? And I think that's part of what you're trying to do here. If you have this sort of limited entry, that's what you're going to do. You're going to preserve it. You can't make the one rule without thinking about how to do the rest of it. Because when you stand in front of the elected person, you're going to say, this is about conservation for a long period of time. And yes, I have thought about how we're going to do this. That's the answer.
My, I would answer that way. If you're on a license and you have a quota, you have to catch it yourself.
You know, the unintended consequences of all this, and I thought coming down here too, Wayne, I got a guy right here that produces off of their private grounds a huge percentage of what I process a year. I've got market that I use for wild caught just off of what they produce private. If his river is shut down tomorrow, he's got a huge investment, made a decision to come back in this industry. If the river that his grounds are on is closed for health department reasons, which he's lost a large percentage in 2 years, based on what we've done, he's out of business. He can't hold a license because he didn't go work on the public when he could have. He could, you know, from his perspective, he could have come out and got in the middle of the mix and competed with everyone else. He can't have a license. He's out of business. So to just make a motion or just decide that, you know, that's the sort of things I'm torn with all of this. I've made motions in the past and done things that came back and didn't work like I thought they were. You caught grief over it. I caught grief over it. You know, I've got people that won't deal with me today because of it. So it's just, you know, Roger's right. It's hard. And I don't know the answers, but it's a lot of thinking to do before we jump out and do it. And that's before you ever get to Richmond and have to deal with all of that. But
I agree.
Well, everything is stopped right now. Can't nobody else new get in it. Isn't that correct?
Until August, yeah.
And, well, is there any benefit to making it where it could get bigger after August?
Well, I mean, if you ended up not doing anything, you could say, let's hold it where it is, 11 and 24. Yeah.
But, I mean, the only reason I even say that is because you still got that, you got a certain amount that's being productive, and you got a certain amount that's not being productive, and they got those licenses that could be sold to a young kid wanting to come into it in the future. But if we can hold it where it's at and not take anything from anybody, I mean, that would be one choice, wouldn't it? And then you would assure yourself of production, and that would be
so
better.
You're saying status quo.
Well, I hate to say that, but at least you're stopping anybody else from coming in.
You got a dying industry.
you know, status quo would be some way to go back in for people to get. I mean, unless you wanted to drop down some point before you allowed any new ones in.
Well, they've already been through that one time, and everybody just went nuts because. Nobody wants to have their licenses taken away. Nobody wants to have what they've had for years. I don't want to have licenses that I've been holding for years and years and years taken away from me.
Well, but you didn't buy yours when there was already a lot of folks.
Regardless of that, yeah. I do not want to have a license that I paid for taken away, period. That's just the way I feel, and I can certainly understand other people feeling that way, regardless of what the date is. So if everything was kept the same as it is and nobody else was allowed to get in because of whatever procedure has to be done for that to be implemented, that would be better than doing nothing.
Well, is the problem mostly the damage to the ground? To me, it seems like when all the boats congregate in certain areas. Is that pretty well holding true, what you're thinking? Like in Rappahannock, you'll have every boat will do want to congregate in one area?
The boats, if they all open at the same time, they're still going to go through, unless you made a season for 2 months. You can go anywhere you're going to go in 2 months. But if you're going to leave it, if you're going to try to keep it open for the entire months, 6 months that we try to cover, even if they were open simultaneously, the water would go to the best areas first.
Oh, absolutely.
Work down.
Well, can there be a way that they'll have to choose which river they want to work in that year, in that season? James River, Rappahannock, York River?
Or have a
lottery or a drawing. Or most people are going to tend to want to work the river that's closer to where they live.
Absolutely.
Not necessarily, but that's what they generally would like to do. That would be preferable, I would say. Well, something like that tend to spread the demand out to the point of where, and if that, something like that would work.
Well, even if it spread it out, it's still going to be what's going to get caught is still going to be the same thing that gets caught.
Yeah, but it ain't like 100 boats on a place small as opposed to maybe 10 or 15 boats on a small. They don't, the damage is where if one boat's going, another one's coming, it's continuous, just like a grindstone, just like you put on a millstone.
Yeah,
and it just grinds it right down. But other boats won't work at that far. It's not near as damaging as it is where you've got a pile of boats congregating.
If you were to do something like that, where do you think the most boats would congregate? Say this is where you're going to work.
James.
And you're talking about opening it all up in the river or just...
Well, you said the season, have them all basically maybe from, say, November, December, January. That's the basic dredge months, right? That's what most people...
Industry really needs October.
They want arsenic boats, but you hand tong in October, most of them, I guess. Your hand tong is exceptional to it. That goes all the way through the season, is that correct?
Well, we would have to look at that because everybody, when the area was closed, they'd go to James River and start hand tong. We saw a really big increase in hand tong this year.
Yeah.
People got done with the
But if it works, say you did have a system that would work, something like that, and towards the end of it, if the river's still producing and the oysters still, you could extend the seasons in those rivers to accommodate as well.
I mean, that's a very small staff to do something like that, and that would be tough. You might be able to divide it up one time, but do a check for extension or something like that.
Yeah.
And it would be really hard to get that word. That would be a complicated word to get out.
Yeah.
That's certainly one of the things we thought about, but.
We have to come up with something by 1st September or September.
We need before that. We need to advertise something in July.
July.
Fisherman.
Oh, that's coming up.
We need to meet back in next month.
No, we need to meet back in 2 weeks.
2 weeks, okay.
Do you have that graph from last year? That's with that same X and Y axis from the 14-15 season?
We can do it.
I mean, the reason I ask is like... The reason I ask is there's the 558 people there that are doing the majority of the producing on the right-hand side, the 558. If you were in this year, your numbers show it was down, just admittingly, just say... It was not as good of a year as the 14-15 season was. If you could pull that chart up for the 14-15 season and see the number of people that did the majority of the producing, if it's somewhat larger than the 558 that are doing it in the 15-16 season, would that not lend you to believe that the resources, due to it not being such a boom, is somewhat managing itself?
Well, one thing...
I mean, would that data not support that?
We would have to do an entirely different analysis because this is user fees. So you've got hand dollars. So the ones that got 500 plus, they may have been...
Well, then that's not pertaining to what we're doing here. If we're worried about hand scraping and drudging, that graph's insignificant to what we're discussing right now anyway.
It was pertaining to the control data. I mean, we tried doing that last year, zeroing in on here, and that didn't go.
Well, that's pretty much that one year, the people who were productive that one year, that same percentage of people that were productive that one year is probably going to be the same amount of percentage of people that were productive the following year. So,
if the resource was the same, if there was a bigger boom, you'd see a larger number of people bigger production from the 50 bushels up. That number would be larger because, again, it was more rewarding to do it and not as difficult to do it. That's what I'm saying with the resource management. Just for next time, whether it be next week, next month, whenever we get together, could you throw that chart together, that graph on that same X and Y axis?
And you want just... Dredge.
No, do it the same as that one is.
Could
with
you
the user
make
fee.
All the gear types in it for
just
that.
I mean, the same.
I'm really confused because most of these really high rollers here are hand haulers.
No, I don't doubt it. That's where the money was at this year.
I mean, that the ones that got the 500 plus, they're the hand haulers.
Yeah, that's where the money was at.
That would confuse you. Because they stay hand hauling for 7 months.
But the percentage of people that are highly productive remains the same year after year, doesn't it?
That's what I'm asking is, can you look at the number of majority producers, as you put it, and correlate that to the harvest? Which, since last year was 177,000 bushels, and this year was 166, it would stand to reason that there'd be more than 558 people in that large producer category, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, except for and that those numbers that you're using are hand scrape and dredge only. This chart that you're
I understand that.
Which to that point.
Well, then make the two with hand scrape and dredge only. So you can see, again, it would show you if the resource is, I'm not saying totally managing itself, but somewhat managing itself. because there are the people that were out there because it was a boom, because they could go make a day's work at 9 o'clock and go do something else the rest of the day. And then there are all those people that are going to work all day because that's what they need to do to feed their family. And on those boom years, that's going to certainly be higher than on these not-so-boom years as this year may have been or next year may be. Again, the resource is weeding out some of the fly-by-nights itself, so to put it.
Which everybody wants to get out of here, but just food for thought going forward. You know, last year's recommendation from the commission probably would have flown and wouldn't have had the political backlash it did if it hadn't across gear types where you had full-time watermen that couldn't, for instance, a full-time hand scraper that had all of the days and he was in the fishery, but he got excluded from the dredge fishery because he only had a number of days. Or he got excluded from the Patentong fishery because he only had so many days in that fishery. What I heard, and, you know, from the guys that were calling me or Richie, you, John, Wayne, what I was hearing from legislators, they weren't getting calls from that guy and from those folks in the 1 to 9 or 10 to 14 day. They were getting calls from someone that was a full-time waterman that did nothing but work on the water, who couldn't get a license to go to Tangier because the year before he was frozen in that year and didn't have enough days. He had 18 days and he didn't have the 20 days to get in. That was what I was hearing the political backlash from, and it seemed to be they were the folks that the legislators were most concerned about.
I agree. That's what it was. It was the true working watermen that worked all the time with losing their license. They would be 19 days.
Well, I was showing then, 2 days. Yeah. I was going to lose mine because of it. We'll judge you.
I wanted to use you as an example, but I wasn't going to do it. I appreciate you.
And as far as I know, I'd work I had mine taken away, year. Too. And then it was given back. And, you know, that's all I've been doing for 40 years.
So kind of going back to the point of, you know, I made a big speech about the legislators. I do think that their biggest concern are full-time working watermen. And just something to think about.
I think that's all of our concerns here.
All right, so we want another meeting in 2 weeks. I don't think anybody's ready to make any kind of motion yet. I'll see if we can. You can send us a PowerPoint.
I'd like to make a motion, but I don't think anybody would agree to it.
I'll make one to adjourn.
I agree to that.
A second.
Jim, can you send us computer? Yeah.
What date is that going to be on, Jim?
Huh?
In 2 weeks. What date? On Wednesday?
Does that work? 2 weeks on Wednesday.
Well, me, I just need
I
to know.
I don't have my calendar with me. If I got your phone with them, tell
me. I need to know.
Today's the 8th, so it'll be
22nd.
22nd?
It's in mine.
Sorry to me.
22nd, 29.
When does that go out in the public? We need a lot
here. 4 o'clock?
There won't be nothing on the public. But it's the
way it's set. Is that on?
Let me tell you. I have 14 hours a day.
Gentlemen, nice to see you.
14 and 15.